The Vital Statistics of Mental Health with psychologist David Abramson is brought to you by the High FM Helpline. Caring, compassionate, confidential. 0800 24 24 36.
David Abramson, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Howard Feldman. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. How are you?
It's my pleasure. Yeah, it's been a tough time for everyone, I think. Sure, this just hasn't been an easy journey, especially the last couple of, I would say, weeks.
Are you seeing it in your practice with your patients?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, we know a lot of people who've been infected with COVID, but I actually don't know anyone, patients, friends, family, who haven't kind of from an emotional point of view been untouched by this now. And I think it's, I think everyone was hoping that somehow, you know, when 2021 came around, that everything would be better.
David, we did warn them. We did warn them. We did try and prepare them.
I know, Howard. I know. But it's just, you know, human nature. We hope that things will be better. And, yeah, they haven't. And I think people have taken it really hard because, as I say, somehow things have got worse. And we're in a new year, and new year often brings hope and, you know, positivity. But we've entered the year with the numbers higher than ever. And it really has hit home for so many people. And I think for all people from an emotional point of view.
Yeah, so I wrote an article earlier in the week that our anxiety and fear is airborne, almost like a virus. And it's we sanitize our hands, but I'm not sure that we spend enough time sanitizing our emotions or sanitizing our brain from this terribly negative environment. And perhaps we need to find a way to socially distance ourselves from it as well. But but those are nice sounding words when we're anxious. When we have difficulty in trying to picture the next few months, it's very different in reality.
It's very difficult. And I think for me, you know, I think we've got to be careful to talk about sanitizing feelings because.
But you have to say that. I don't.
That's true. Absolutely, absolutely. That's hopefully why I'm here on Thursday.
Exactly.
I think again, if we think about trauma, and we've all, I would say now, have gone through a degree of a trauma. You know, some people more than others. And when you think about a trauma, you know, one of the things that you do feel is immobilized, and I think it's so important that we. Keep in mind that we are traumatized by what's been happening around us and that we should consider ourselves going through a trauma. So when you think about a trauma, as I say, you feel immobilized. And I think that's one of the things that you want to do when you do experience a trauma is to take control of the things that you can take control of. Because I know you've been through a trauma and one of the things maybe how you could relate to is that you don't feel in control of what happens to you.
Yes.
And you lose agency. And I think that's one of the things which is important to talk about is to take control of what you can. And one of them is to reach out and talk to other people about how you're feeling. So in a way, if we say sanitize, I think we've got to be careful not to give people the impression that if you don't talk about it, how you're feeling, that it's gone and that you're going to feel better about it.
Right.
It's amazing how important it is to reach out to other people.
Yes, no, I'm absolutely not saying that we should pretend those feelings don't exist. But it is really about control. And in the article, I spoke about the fact that I used to have, I went through a phase where I had this fear of flying and I realized it was all about control. It was all about me not being able to be in the control that I wanted to be. And I had to let go of that and look at what the things were that I could control. And that it wouldn't help for me to sit up through the night watching what was going on because there was nothing I was going to be able to do about it anyway. But it's almost this idea that we think we can be in control of the things that we can't be.
Absolutely. And that's so important what you're saying. And again, you know, the things that often psychologists suggest are, you know, people will turn around and go, oh, you know, that's so simple. You know, what else can we do? What is the magic?
Where's the magic? Yeah, exactly.
But the thing with human nature is that we often don't do the simplest things which would really, really help us the most. You know, because it just seems too simple. You know, we look for something so, you know, integrated and we have to think it through and we have to, it's going to be so much more complicated, because if it's complicated, then it's more effective. And that's often not the case. And I think for me, when it comes to this situation, you know, things like simple things like keep moving, you know, like physically your brain and physically your body. So to actually go for walks, get out there. Take the dogs for a walk, take your family for a walk. It is so important to keep your body moving.
And those are simple things. I mean, and you're right. And very often they're counterintuitive, because you're sitting at home, you're sitting on the couch, you feel miserable and negative. You don't feel like getting up and going. It's actually the last thing in the world you want to do. But if you do that, you will feel better. I'd love to hear from listeners on 34519 or 0618951019. What are you feeling? How are you feeling at the moment when you've either come back from holiday or haven't had a holiday? You're looking at the year, you hear reading the news, you're hearing the numbers. What are you feeling? And part two to that is, have you found that there is something that helps your mood that maybe you could share with us and with our listeners?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Howard, another thing that we can often do is, you know, is to put structure to our days, which is also, I think, really helpful.
Yeah. So, help us through that. What does that mean? Is that structuring every minute of your day? Is that having certain points at the day that you do certain things? Dig a bit deeper into that.
Absolutely. Well, I think for me, really, it's about just having, not about running your day like clockwork, that every single minute or most of your time is structured and, you know, kind of exactly what you're doing hour to hour, but having milestones in your day, you know, that you put in place, that you know you're going to be doing it at that particular time. And then you can structure your day around that, you know, around those milestones. Because again, when you think about a trauma, you know, you often lose a sense of being grounded. You often lose a sense of predictability in your world.
Right.
And I think it's so important that we put things in place in our day. Two, three things, you know, that we use as anchors in our day to look forward to. So I think help us to structure our day to make it more predictable and consistent. And I think that also helps with anxiety. We often talk about predictability and consistency, which really helps. It's the antidote to anxiety. So to try and make your day a little bit more predictable, a little bit more consistent. And I think that often helps people to lower their anxiety.
What about our children? Because whereas we have been told within the Jewish schools that they're going to go back on, I think it's January 19th, I'm still a bit doubtful as to whether that will happen or not. And it'll be interesting to see. Personally, I would, in fact, think that they should wait a week. But that's just my own view on these things. I know parents are going to hate me for that. I just think it just keeps us a little bit safer for one extra week, which is not going to make any difference anyway. That's my thought on it. But that's but what that shows is that no parent really can say to their kid with any confidence, next week you're going back to school. We're going to start the new grade. It's going to be exciting. It's scary. It's actually not that exciting.
Yeah. No, it's again, we talk about that unpredictability and that, you know, and again, that's what makes our anxiety low, as we've said. And I think, you know, I think for me, the reason why school is so important is exactly the point we were talking to around structure. I think for so many people who have children, whether it's in, you know, primary school, high school, nursery school, that structures your life to a large degree. You know, you really do run your life, even, you know, dads, moms, around school. And I think that's why there is this huge push to go back to school. And obviously there needs to be a balance between physical safety and emotional well-being. But I do think for me, that's why school is plays such a vital part helping everyone, not only the children. And of course, we talk about that face-to-face interaction, that face-to-face learning, which is absolutely, you know, vital. But I do think for me, that's why school is, you know, they're even talking about going back to school, which seems, as you're saying, fairly irrational when you look at the numbers, and obviously, you know, some hard decisions are going to have to be made next week. But I think, you know, the reason why it's on the table is because of the huge benefit it brings, not only to the children, who are sitting at home, who have less structure to the day, who are spending way too much time, which we understand, on tech, not being as active, not seeing their friends, really would benefit hugely from going back to school face to face on some level. And as I say, not only the children, but the parents very much would benefit from being in some kind of normal, if you want to call it, familiar structure. So I think that would really be a huge boost. And, as you say, it's a bit, seems very irrational talking about it because of the numbers, but I think that's the reason why, you know, the emotional, I think for adults for children alike is absolutely huge.
The other thing that I know that I've suggested in work environments is obviously everything's moved to tech, phone calls, Zoom meetings, team meetings, etc. And what I noticed towards the end of last year is that less and less people were putting their cameras on.
Yes.
I think that that's very important in a work environment, that, or any environment actually, is have a visual call with somebody, because that forces you to brush your hair, put a shirt on, make yourself just a little bit more presentable. Nobody's saying that you need to go black tie, but it just means
yes.
that you actually have to have a little bit of self-care. And when
yes.
you do that, and when you're choosing a shirt instead of just hanging around in your, I don't know, t-shirt that you slept in, is very, very different. You know, when you do have to put on a shirt, you have to choose something, you brush your hair, in the event of you having hair. And things are, you do feel better already when you put effort into yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, we often talk about the need to be seen, and it's, I think, you know, it's so, even more important now than ever before, when, you know, human beings, it's important for human beings to be seen, and not only from a emotional point of view, but from an actual practical point of view, because, you can hide, behind a telephone call. You can hide behind your screen if your screen is turned off. And it is so important that, and we've seen this more and more, you know, that face to face connection, has degrees, and obviously, The true face-to-face connection is really what feeds us, in-person face-to-face connection. But if we can't do that, then absolutely, Howard, the face-to-face connection on a screen is the next best thing. And I think it's so important that we show our faces, and we connect on that level, because obviously there is degrees of connection. And I would say, not having your screen on really, really lowers that connection to a huge degree. And we see that in therapy as well. You know, when you do a phone call, compared to an online, Zoom call, for example, compared to being in person, you know, definitely you can see and feel, it's almost tangible, the degrees of connection. So it's so important to try and connect as deeply as possible, and visual definitely helps with it.
Ian says, please can you ask David to talk about the importance and of acknowledging and accepting the reality of fatigue. And Ian is somebody, and I know I've spoken to a lot of people who have been through, who have unfortunately had COVID, and fatigue is something that they're experiencing on a very, very physical level. The rest of us feeling fatigue on all sorts of other emotional levels. But that does seem to be almost a common denominator for everything that a lot of us are experiencing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we are spending so much more time. I mean, if you think about it, you know, obviously those people who, you know, who've had the virus, there's talk of feeling fatigued and fatigued for quite a period of time after, you know, experiencing the virus. But I think when you think, when you do think about what we're all experiencing, we are on alert. You know, I know we all hear about this fight or flight. And when you think about it, we are in this heightened state of alertness all the time, you know, you know, if someone brings a delivery to your house, there's an alert, you know, are you wearing your mask when you go out? How do we entertain the children? You know, are our friends safe? You know, we are on this kind of, and this is higher alert, and we're not as supposed to be as human beings. We're not as supposed to be, on this heightened level of alert because we're only supposed to use it when we really, you know, need it, when we really are kind of, our lives are threatened. And actually, you know, this is kind of goes against, this counterintuitive, because the, you know, normally what we build for is for the threat to be there. We avoid the threat or we take care of the threat and then we reset. So our bodies are really, and our minds are really, absolutely feeling fatigued from being on alert too much. So I think for me, it's so important to acknowledge this. It's so important what Ian is saying, you know, from a physical point of view, absolutely from the coronavirus, but also from an emotional point of view. And, you know, I think in society, there's a lot of pressure on us to not feel tired, you know, and I think that really maybe is one of the lessons hopefully we'll learn and take away from this.
One that I have to learn. I definitely look down on tired people.
Yeah,
I judge, you know, tired people. I actually, tired people irritate me.
No, absolutely. And I think for me, it's so important that it's okay to be tired. It's okay to, you know, to have a rest.
No, but that can use the word fatigued, then I'm fine, because it sounds like it's much more serious. It doesn't sound, you know, like when Ian writes that he's fatigued, you know, I feel, wow, Shane, that's terrible. But somebody must tell me they're tired. I don't know. I feel like bashing them.
I remember going on a few runs with you, Howard, and you said you were tired.
No, okay, I'm always tired on a run. That's different. And I imagine that I irritate real runners for the same reason. David, I suppose, I think it's also probably valuable to remind people that there are so many online events. There's webinars, there's discussions, there's courses that you can do. There is just so much that you could do that it's really well worth, put your computer away for 10 minutes or half an hour and sit down with a pen and paper and write maybe some things that you want to achieve. What course do you want to do? Do you want to learn to cook something? Do you want to, something ridiculous? You know, learn a little bit of history that you've always meant to go back to, learn a skill. There are things to do. And I know that people are rolling their eyes because, you know, we made such a fuss of this last year when this started happening, and then people started feeling guilty. Well, I haven't learned to you know, my conversational Spanish is terrible and I wanted to improve it. But, but there is so much that we can do, and it's well worth doing it.
Absolutely. And I think, as you're saying, lower your expectations. You know, you don't have to feel that you have to do something life changing, like learn a new instrument or, as you say, a new language. You know, some fantastic things that I know some of my clients have been doing is, you know, learning new recipes and trying them out. And I know it sounds so small, but it's something so significant, you know, to create something, to bring something new into your life, into your palate. You know, it can be as simple as that. So I think often people, you know, do roll their eyes, you know, because it feel, you know, they do feel fatigued. They do feel overwhelmed already by everything that the coronavirus is presenting them. And now this added pressure to, you know, to do something life changing. Not at all. You know, it's not about, doing something, always to that extent. You can do smaller things. And as I say, one of the ideas, as I've said, that I've heard from our clients is that, you know, you've got your kitchen, you need to cook. Is people are really, you know, I have a client who learned to make sushi, which was amazing, you know, and it really gives a sense of accomplishment, doing something.
So absolutely. David, we do need to leave it there. Very important conversation. Thank you for your wisdom, keeping me on the straight and narrow, and we'll catch you next week.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.